Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. This is the Best Ever You Show with Elizabeth Hamilton and Dr. Katie Eastman. And I love it because we came into this show all giggling. And I think we're giggling over the fact that Katie and I went to ballet last night. Right, Katie?
We did. It was the first time in 25 years I've put those shoes on. It was pretty amazing.
Can you move today?
I can. I really can. I took some Tylenol before I went to bed, but I can move. And, you know, I'm walking around with like a peacock today because I feel so proud of myself. And but, you know, I got to tell you, what I kept imagining today is, you know, our 15 minutes of fame could come from, if somebody could have videotaped us doing those leaps last night, we could have made it on YouTube. I mean, you know,
they were bad, weren't they? I thought the sachet dégagé followed by the profound, you know, I think I probably got about maybe a foot off the ground. How about you?
I have no idea.
You know,
what I did was I pointed my toes and I moved. I have no idea what I looked like. But what
you know
was
it's
so
sad.
Really, oh, it was sad. But it was so valuable because, yeah, well, but you know, one of the
clap
things.
Of, yay, you were so good, you sucked.
I know.
That was funny. Okay, so anyway, enough about our ballet adventure maybe, or what do you have to say?
Well, one of the things I wanted to say about what Erica's going to talk about is it was so good to get out of my head and to do what Erica talks about in her book, which is to really just let my passion go through and not think about how, but just to do it. And so I thought, you know, it was really cool to get out of my head. So
hey,
that's
my intro.
You're in anxiety
mode there. I think if I hadn't called you before to make sure that you picked me up, you might not have shown up.
Yeah, you're right. I think sometimes we all need, I was scared to death. And I think everybody needs somebody to just make sure they do something that they want to do, but they're afraid to do.
Yeah. So welcome, Erica Diamond. So a lady who makes everything do what they're scared to do. And
Yeah.
Kidding.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much. And for everyone, Erica, you're the founder. Do we call you CEO, president? I don't know. Women on the fence. And
I feel like my grandmother. She used to say, call me grandma, nana, whatever you want. Just call me.
Exactly. Or just go to the website, Women on the Fence.
Just,
and
I don't care about titles. I'm Women on the Fence, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. For those listening who haven't been to that website before, what is Women on the Fence? And a little bit maybe, who are you? I know you're from Montreal.
My name
right
is Erica Diamond. Sorry?
Are you in Montreal right now, by the way, or are you in the States?
I am in Montreal right now, sitting in my office, looking at tons of snow.
Yeah, we're not. We're looking at blue sky and 30 degrees in Maine and still no snow. And my office actually looks like a hurricane went through. I don't know what
you're
happened
lucky.
In here. Yeah,
oh,
anyway.
You're lucky about the warm weather. It's been a lot of snow here. But yes, no, my name is Erica Diamond. And I am the founder of WomenOnTheFence.com, and that is a blog that has really become successful sort of beyond my wildest expectations. It started out as a hobby a year ago, and what became just sort of a creative outlet for me has turned into the most incredible, wonderful connection with the most incredible women and mompreneurs and just a whole engaged audience, and it's been incredible.
Yeah, kind of like Best Ever You in a way, where it started out so little and it grows to the point where, you know, you never know who you're going to talk to next, right?
You never know. Or, you know, for you, who you're going to talk to next. For me, what I'm going to write about next. So the whole concept behind the blog is that it was created because I was on the fence in my life. So I had, you know, had a successful business in a previous life 4 years ago, in a previous life. Well, I sold it in 2006 to Canada's largest bag of retail, the largest bag retail chain, and because I was completely burning out in my business, and I felt like a horrible mom. I had this new, beautiful, bouncing baby boy at home, and I really felt like I was sort of failing everywhere as a bad mom and a bad business owner. So I got, as they say, you know, an opportunity, you know, an offer I couldn't refuse. So I took the offer. I sold my company after almost a decade of great success, and I just stayed home. I just wanted to just sit in my PJs all day and do nothing because I was so burnt out.
Do you mind my asking what kind of business was that you sold?
Sure. It was
because
a premium.
Go ahead. I'm sure people want to know what it is that you were doing before, and maybe what age you started, because there's a lot of women who, especially younger women, you know, they could be in their early 20s who are always looking up to people and what they do and so forth. So yeah, any information about that business would be great.
Yeah, that's exactly how old I was when I started. I was 24 when I started my business, and the business was I sold premium and incentive items, promotional items and corporate gifts. So stuff with the corporate logo like pens, T-shirts, caps, mugs that companies give to their employees or clients with a corporate logo.
And
for trade shows and Christmas gifts.
What gave you the idea to do something like that at age 24?
Well, I had we can get into the whole that I flunked out of MBA school story after, but what had started is I had gone to, I'd studied psychology and marketing, and I had, you know, got my first great job, so good work experience. My plan was to go to MBA school, but I think as my famous story goes, I bombed my GMAT and I never got in. So I had this whole plan.
There's a lot of people like that.
They love it because they draw inspiration. They say, my God, look, here's a woman who failed and still became successful. So I think that's a great message for people to know that sometimes we have a plan the way we think things are going to go, and that doesn't happen. But sometimes that's a sign that we should go in a completely different direction, and that doesn't mean that that path is going to be bad. It could be sometimes the best path for us.
Yeah, there's this famous list that floats around every so often of all these people who are really famous or successful now that Harvard turned away.
Yeah, of course. Or even, what's her name, J.K. Rowling. Also, you know, who she sent her script, I think, to like 12 publishers, and then only one wanted to publish her. So.
Yeah. There's a lot of that goes around. It's very interesting. Katie.
One of the things that really struck me in your story, Erica, and I hear it all through your book, and I wanted to ask you about it because it's something that I know everyone who wants to start a business wants to do but can't quite figure out how. And even in your original business, you have the attitude of being unique. Can you talk about that? How did you figure out how to be unique?
Well, so much of everyone's, when you look at it, you know, when you look at it, we really are all unique. We all have sort of our individual stamp print. So we are all unique, so we start out unique, okay? So what we have to do from there is build on our own uniqueness. So what I did is when I looked at my competition in the business world as to who else was doing promotional and premium and incentive items, it was a very, very competitive industry. So I had to stand out if I was going to be successful, right? So firstly what I did from, I guess we didn't even call it SEO back then, but from the internet was becoming popular in 99 when I started. So I wanted Google to find me. I knew that if I was easily findable on Google, I would have a higher success rate. So I called my company. I said, well, you know, what's a great word? Unique. I love the word unique. Unique is someone that you want to align yourself with. So I called. So I was doing corporate gifts. So I said, I'm going to call myself UCG, Unique Corporate Gifts, so that if someone goes to Google and they search in unique gift ideas or corporate gifts or unique corporate gift ideas, I would come up high. So I didn't even really know what I was doing at the time. I mean, we call it SEO today, but back then, I just knew that I wanted to be found and easily accessible. So I called it unique. Then I became more than what everyone else was doing, which was just about logos and pens and T-shirts. I wanted to be your one-stop shop for everything that everything that you would reward your employees and clients for. So it wasn't just about the pens and the caps. I would get your best clients front row seats to the Super Bowl or a massage for your hardworking secretary. I became the hub for all companies looking to reward employees or clients. So I became more than just about promotional items. We had done Michael Jordan signed jerseys for people's best clients. It was more than just promotional items, and you know, a whole bunch of things as to what I did to make myself unique. But I had that vision that I was going to be more than just about the competition. I wanted to make it easy for everyone. I wanted it to be a one-stop shop.
So I have a question for you. In high school, I'm going to take you back to high school for a minute, a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I always do this with people when they're guests on our show. Were you super, super, super smart? Were you the cheerleader? Who were you in high school?
Well,
because
I have
think
to be honest.
Who you are in high school shapes you, who you are
okay.
sometimes in your life. Yeah.
Sure. Well, I wasn't a cheerleader because there wasn't really any cheerleading here in Montreal, but I was in the high school fashion show almost every year. I'm a ballet dancer. I'm a ballet dancer and ballet teacher. So music is my, I call myself like a musicaholic, so music has been in me. So no cheerleading, but I danced in a fashion show almost every year, and I was a ballet dancer, and I was always, I think, I was always outgoing. I was always a lover of life and always a lover of people and always very curious.
Mm-hmm.
So,
did you get straight A's?
Sorry?
I'm just curious. Did you get straight A's or anything like that?
Oh, God, no. I look at
okay.
my son, and he's so naturally smart. I'm in awe of him. Not only did I not get straight A's, I worked my butt off to just get B's. Like, nothing came easy to me as far as school.
Okay.
I did okay. I got, you know, A's, A minuses, B's, B pluses. I was, you know, I was above average student, but I wasn't a straight A student. But whatever marks I got, I had to work very, very hard for. Nothing came easy to me in school at all.
Yeah.
So I look at my son, and he's so smart. He doesn't even apply himself, and he's just naturally smart. And I'm like,
smart,
you are lucky, boy.
Well, that's what I was getting at. I was curious as to whether you were one of those people who just everything comes to and you don't really have to work at it, or if, you know, things that you're doing right now, you're really working hard at doing to make it successful and so forth, or if just life is real easy for you and you navigate through just fine.
I'm navigating through just fine, but it comes with a tremendous amount of hard work and perseverance and determination and everything you read about what it takes to be successful. I'm living proof that it's, you can't just sort of wish it and just pray that it's going to happen.
Yeah, no, and I think I like to talk about this a little bit because it really doesn't seem like, even in my life for the past 2 years with Best Ever You, I think I've probably worked at least 18 hours a day. Every day for 2 years. I mean, it just seems like you live, eat, and breathe what you're doing.
You do. I can tell you I certainly am. I certainly am doing everything you just said. I'm eating, sleeping, breathing, women on the fence. There's no question.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. I wanted to go to your book for just a minute because, you know, it's very hard. It's hard enough in these days to be a wife and a mother and a volunteeraholic and all the things that we do, but it's neat you have a book too, and so not only do you have all those things and you have a website, but you have a book, and that's a really hard thing to do. When did you sit down and write this book? Is it something that you've always thought about doing, or did the idea spark from Women on the Fence?
It's such an interesting story how this book came to be. So I had started my blog. I had always loved to write, so that's even why I had started the blog. So sometime last year, I suspected that my husband had H1N1. So it was a Friday night, and his breathing, it's when H1N1 was sort of in its prime, and his breathing became a little bit labored, and he had a fever, and I suspected he had H1N1. So I called my mom and dad over to babysit my children. I said, I've got to take my husband to the emergency. I think that he's not doing so well. So I rushed him to the emergency, and I was sitting in the family room waiting to find out if he had H1N1. And then when they said that he didn't, I was laughing with the nurses because I had volunteered in the emergency at this particular hospital. And so I said, he's such a faker. Figures he's a hypochondriac. And so this woman is looking at me and laughing. You know, she laughs at us, you know, that I'm making fun of my husband here. And I'm saying, of course he doesn't have H1N1. What a faker. And she was waiting to find out if her daughter had H1N1. So we were sort of two moms and women sitting in the family room waiting on our loved ones to see if they were okay. And I just, you know, I just, I don't know if I have that face that says, like, hello, I'm ready to chat. But we started talking. And, you know, what do you do? What do you do? So I told her that I had, you know, just started this blog. And I said, what do you do? And she said, well, I'm the founder of this new book series called the 99 Series. And the concept behind the book series is that it's called the 99 Things You Wish You Knew Before, ... you know, before having the talk with your kids, before getting fit, before online dating, before doing all these different things for women. I said, that sounds so cool. So she said, I'm going to check out your blog. So I got an email the next day that said, you're not going to believe it. We are looking for someone to write the 99 Things Women Wish They Knew Before, a women's book, before an entrepreneurship book for women. She says, and I think you would be perfect to write the book. So so from that meeting in the hospital room became this book. So I said, what an amazing idea. And I love the concept of the series. And so the 99 points just, you know, the 99 things just came really easy to me because it was really my story into entrepreneurship and my you know, my pitfalls along the way and the mistakes that I made along the way and my ability to teach these women who are reading the book how they can avoid all these mistakes that I made along the way.
Right.
And so that's how the book came to be, from sitting in the emergency room waiting on H1N1.
Well, and you know, there's a great, really important point in that story, Erica, and I'm so glad you shared that, because what really strikes me about that story is how clear you were, how clearly defined you were about what you wanted to do. So when that opportunity arose, it was right there for you, and you could just say, yes.
And I seized the moment.
You seized the moment, and I think a lot of times where women especially get stuck is what we talked about. We're multitaskers. We have interests all over the map, and we're not really clear and focused and direct on what we want to do and what our passion really is. So when an opportunity comes along like that, someone might not grab it because they might not think, oh, gee, how does that fit with what I want to do? Because they don't really know what they want to do yet. So can you speak to that? How does a woman figure out her passion?
That is, well, you know what? I speak about that in my book. You know, all the whole thing of unlocking your passion, right?
Yep.
So there's a few things that I say. So if you're talking about unlocking your passion as far as if you're talking entrepreneurship, so you say, I'm tired of working for someone else. I've decided I want to be my own boss. I don't know, how do I know what business to start, right? I don't know what my passion is. So, you know, my first thing, and I mentor a group of budding entrepreneurs. And so some of them are already on their way and some of them don't know yet what they want to do or what they want to be. So the first thing I encourage people to do is to say, so first we look at, you know, what you're, forget about your hobbies, but what are you good at? So some people say they'd love to make a career out of a hobby, but that wouldn't necessarily always be the case. So what I say to people is, what are you good at? So for example, there was a man in my group who he wanted to start a business in a domain that was completely, he had no experience in. However, he had 25 years as the operations manager of many different large companies. So when he was trying so hard and failing at these businesses, I said to him, well, what are you good at? Forget about what you love. You have to put food on the table and support a family. What are you good at? What are your talents? So he said, well, I know operations in and out. So I said to him, can you not start your own operations consulting firm? This is what you know. People have paid for your expertise over the years. So instead of people, you know, instead of taking your passion or your hobby and making it a career, if that can't happen, I encourage people to really look at their skill set and what they're good at and try and make a career out of that. Another thing for unlocking your passion, can you see yourself doing this in 10 years, 15 years? Because if you can't see yourself doing it day in and day out, you're not going to be successful. So that's another thing for unlocking your passion. There's certain things that we, you know, due to fears that we have and inhibitions, we don't put ourselves out there. And that means to meet people, to discover what we love, to go back to a hobby that we had loved many years ago. So to unlock our passion, we have to go live this world. And I don't mean travel because that's expensive. I mean just get out there and meet people, join networking groups, see what you like. See what you enjoy. You know, find a mentor. I speak about, I think it's so important to find a mentor, or, you know, a mentor acts as your sounding board to help guide you and help you process your thoughts So you can find a mentor by going online, or perhaps to someone in your community that you would love to reach out to help you guide you in the right path to unlocking your passion and figuring out what it is you want to do. I mean, there's so many different things that you can do to unlock your passion. And then once your passion's unlocked, then it's all just, it's game plan from there, right? Once
yeah,
you know what you want
to
do.
Right, right. And once, and I think the building of what you want to do is the work that also needs to be done long before you start building your business plan.
Well, of course, you have to plan. So you would ask me a question before about how the business came to be. So I didn't just wake up one day and say, oh, my goodness, I was born to sell promotional items, right? That didn't happen. But how it did happen was is I knew that I wanted to start my own business, and I had always had an eye for purchasing. I'd always thought I had had an eye for trends and for products, for knowing how to buy good things at good prices. So what I said is, hey, it would be so cool. I'd love to have a gift store maybe and you know, help people find a great wedding gift or, you know, a gift for an occasion. And then I said, wait. It was actually my father who said to me, retail, Erica, is very, very tough. It's many hours, and, you know, because sometimes it's a cash business, and, you know, sometimes then you have to worry about leftover inventory, and sometimes employees steal from you. And so I sort of realized, I said, you know what, maybe these people who are helping me are right. Maybe retail is not the right angle. And then I thought about it and said, wait, I have a passion for buying, and I have an understanding of buying. It's the same effort to sell one wine decanter in a gift store as it is to sell 1,000 wine decanters to a corporation. What would be more profitable? What would make more sense? So that's why. So that's when I took my knowledge and my passion, and I channeled it into something that made good sense. So that's why I also say in my book, work hard but work smart. And that's an example of working smart. For the same effort that it takes to sell one something, it's the same effort to sell 1,000, believe it or not. So it made more sense, and more, you know, from a business standpoint as well, to do it corporately and volume-based.
I'd like to pull out one entire chapter of your book and talk about it if we can.
Sure.
One of the chapters, you already hit on the mentor point, and I was going to talk about that. Number 27 is go find yourself a mentor. But chapter five is really important to, I think it's really a fundamental for everyone, and that's knowing how to sell yourself. I love this. If you can't sell yourself, you're not going to sell anything, and it's so true, and it speaks to the chapter before it also, which is your attitude and believing in yourself and so forth. So kind of chapter 4 and 5 go hand in hand, but I wanted to break them apart a little bit, talk about chapter 5. Why did you write that? Know how to sell yourself. Let's see,
because
if it's kind of some of the same thinking I have. Just curious.
You hit the nail right on the head. You said what I would have said, which is if you can't sell yourself, whatever product, service, whatever you're doing, you're not going to be able to sell it. So that means that when you put yourself out to the world and you're representing whatever it is you're selling, be it a, you know, it could be a web business, whatever it is that you're trying to make a profit off of, or whatever you're doing in the business world, if you are not your authentic self, if you are not able to come across as someone who is knowledgeable in this area, someone who can sell this product, someone could always, they always said, Eric, I can smell you coming miles away. You so love what you're doing. And so people gravitate towards people who are A, positive, and B, I say it in my book also when I talk about dressing for success, people like to align themselves with a winner. And I say never underestimate people's gravitation towards successful people. So that's why I say you've got to sell yourself. You've got to be that image of success. You've got to be that person, that passionate person. And then, you know, and then from there, people just, they gravitate towards you if you have a genuine, authentic way of selling yourself to the world, of representing your product.
Yeah, I have this experience one time that happened with me where I auditioned for a lot of commercials and do a fair shake of commercials and acting and so forth, and I am a human being that's allergic to shellfish, and I had to audition for a Red Lobster commercial, And the tagline was, I love lobster, you know, kind of thing. And
right,
I'm sitting there,
right.
No matter how I said it, it still doesn't come out right to this day.
Yeah, you couldn't.
And the lady
it.
Looked at me and she goes, what's, you know, they're filming and they're like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, I'm allergic. I have a medic alert on. She goes, oh, you know, kind of thing. But that's the way this is. You know, it's, if you're selling it, it's got to be really, even if it's something like acting in a way, for me, I have to be authentic with everything. And if I don't actually like the product or something, I can't even, I really can't do the commercial.
Sure.
Do you think it's that simple?
Well, no, it's not that simple. It's not that simple. It's actually quite complex, and there's a whole bunch of different things that you can do if it doesn't. Like for me, selling comes naturally. I hate looking at numbers. I used to hire accountants. We all have our forte, and we all know what we like to do and what we're strong at. So for me, sales was something that came naturally. So it's something I think that everyone needs to be able to do if they're starting a business, which is be able to sell themselves. But there are different tools that you can do to learn to begin to sell yourselves. You know, you can practice at certain local networking events, how to come out of your shell, and there's certain exercises that you can do to be able to present yourself, you know, in a positive light to the public for whatever you're doing.
Right.
But like I said, for me, selling myself was something that came naturally only because I've always I do what I love. This is my second business, and my first business I loved, and what I'm doing now I love. So for me, in that sense, that is really all effortless, and I think that's why women have gravitated to the blog, because they genuinely feel that I'm so passionate about the women and about admitting that I'm just a work in progress as well, and we're all just struggling at the end of the day to live a life of happiness and integrity. So I think people appreciate honesty and integrity, and so that has been the success of the blog, and I think that'll be the success of any person to be a person of integrity, and when that happens, you're much better able to sell yourself and your product and services.
Yeah.
Well,
Katie?
You know, there's also a part of authenticity, too, the complexity that you talk about. I always say it's all about relationships in business. And it's also who you surround yourself with. And you talk about that. You know, surround yourself with successful people.
Yeah, with
you
the
mentioned
best, yeah.
Having someone who is that listens to you, who asks you questions, who probes you. And you know, I think that is a really important point as well. It's who do you surround yourself with when you're building a passionate dream? And I kind of bring that up also, not just from your book, but I just recently went to see The Social Network, and wow, talk about raising.
Oh my God, it's the best movie I think I've ever seen in my life. No joke.
It's amazing. It's just phenomenal. I mean, there's this one word after another, you go, wow, huh? But what it makes you think about is that importance of authenticity and that importance of heart. And you really speak to that in your book. Can you talk about that? Because I think for anyone who's seen that movie, and so many people have, it is highlighted throughout how vitally important, if you have a passion and you have heart, you also have to surround yourself with like-minded people.
Well, you have to, but you know what I talk about in the, you know, about that in the book, but I also say the problem for the catch 22 for all this and surrounding yourself with the best. And I talk about George Steinbrenner, how he assembled his team, right? He believed at winning at all costs, and so he assembled the best team, and so that has kept him winning year after year because he surrounded himself with the best. And that was everyone. It was managers, it was players, it was the whole team. The team was driven towards excellence, right? Now,
right.
The problem when you're starting a business is often just a real lack of capital. So it's very difficult. It's great if you're, you know, if you're years into your company and you're successful to attract the best and to be able to afford the best. When I started my business, that was not the case for me. So I had to make the best with what, you know, with whatever small salary I had to pay someone or whatever little working capital I had at the beginning. So at the beginning, when you're starting up, that's difficult because we all know that hiring the best is important and it's important to the success of the company. But what do you do when you don't have a lot of money to attract the best, right?
Right.
Yeah.
that's, you want to surround yourself the best, but that's, those are some of the pitfalls and problems that startup companies incur. They know that they want to hire the best, but they don't have the money at the beginning, because, you know, you're not turning profits yet. So they don't have the money to really attract the best. So what do you do? Well, you know, you've got to get someone, obviously, who, you know, what I would do is I'd always offer an incentive to someone. So if they reach their sales goals or surpass their sales goals, there was an incentive in there for them to chase the stars, and then they would help themselves and, of course, me along the way and the company along the way. So I would always hire someone who I – and it was all by feel. I would feel if this person really shared the same visions as me and the goals for themselves and for the company. So if they were a team player and they were driven towards success, then I knew that maybe on that particular first day they came to the company, I wouldn't have the money to pay them maybe that they had envisioned, but I know that if they surpassed their sales goals and were, you know, the company was making more money, then I wanted to make sure that they could share in that, that there wasn't a ceiling. I never wanted anyone to feel like there was a ceiling working with me. I wanted people to feel that the harder they worked, the better that they could do. Mm-hmm. And so that's how you start to assemble the team. I always gave incentive. There was always an incentive for people to work. It was never just a salary. So by doing that, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, it's okay. I just I want to push us back to selling yourself for a minute, though. And when you're done, I want to break back to going to sell yourself, because I want to give people some really tangible things that they can take from this call.
Sure.
Maybe 5 or 10 tips or something like that, because we're slightly off track, and I just want to push us back to that when you finish your thought.
So your question is how to sell yourself?
Yeah, I really want to break for a minute and go back to chapter 5 of your book.
Sure.
Because I think it's really very key to a lot of people who might be sitting in their homes with a blog or something like that going,
yeah,
I have no idea,
yeah,
how to do this. Great writer,
yeah,
having a lot of fun hiding in my jammies and, you know, on my computer at home. But how in the heck do I really actually get out there? Do you have maybe 5 or 10, you know, even a couple things that would make somebody who doesn't have the self-confidence in themselves to think, hey, you know, I'm a winner and I can sell this, other than, because for some people, people aren't born with that passion for selling and so forth. Sometimes the selling part is the worst.
Well, you know what,
I
talk about that.
Especially taking a check from somebody, it's uncomfortable.
Sure, well, but I that's actually point number 41 in my book, where I say we
right.
actually are all born salespeople. So just because, you know, you may not think you are, and that's when I say, you know, does your kid ever twist your arm into that second bowl of ice cream, right? So
yeah.
Even we learn to sell from child age, like from when we're kids. So, I mean, there's a few things about selling yourself. Like I said, I talk about integrity and coming from a place of integrity. I talk about being likable as far as selling yourself, because we buy from people that we like. So I talk about likability, the likability factor leading to increased sales in a company. You know, about being relatable for people. We buy from who we like. Okay, so, you know, it's to be relatable but not overconfident. You know, to be able to get into the minds of your prospects when you're selling to them. So when you forecast how they're going to think, you're able to respond and react to them in a way to give them what they need, to have good listening skills to them, to be able to give them what they need.
What about learning how to listen? How do you teach somebody who's always talking to just listen?
Well, the best way is they're going to learn that by error. And that was, I always talk about in my book, is that had always been one of my areas that I needed to work on. And so there was a few times where I had lost an order, where I had worked so hard to close the deal and I had lost the order. And when I went back to the client and I said, please be honest with me, what did I do wrong? How come I didn't get the order? And they said, because you didn't quite give me what it was that I was looking for. I was looking for A, and you showed me B and C. So right there, that was a good lesson for me, to consciously think, to stop. So for a person to learn how to listen, to really sit back, to grab a pen and paper, to take notes, to listen. Are you talking from a business perspective, or are we talking, because if we're talking business, I always suggest to bring a pen and paper and to sit back and to be a conscious listener and an active listener, to attune yourself to the person, to make sure that you can leave with notes and you can think about what they said and you can come back with the right answer instead of, you know, cutting them off. So it's all, for me, about learning how to be an active listener and sitting quietly and truly not forecasting your next question, but really, am I listening to what they're saying? Am I hearing what they're saying? And then am I giving them what they need?
Good. Yeah, I think those are all really valuable tools. And tying that into, Katie, what you guys were talking about, this is why I wanted to break there for a second, was with that movie, The Social Network, you guys were talking about surrounding yourself with positive people. And I wanted to talk about sometimes the negative part a little bit that can go with the nose of selling and so forth. Yeah. I always say you encounter a lot of no's before you get to the yes sometimes. Do you believe that, or do you think it's all yes, 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 yes? Here, let me hand you $1,000, $5,000, $10,000, or are there a series of no's that you go through when you're selling and so forth?
Oh, my goodness. If you haven't heard a no, then I would love to meet you because I don't think Where
right.
are you if you've never heard a no? No, the whole problem, the whole hard part about it is, how do you bounce back from the no?
Yeah.
Because when you hear a no, how do you not feel discouraged? So when I was sitting with my people and we were talking about telemarketing calls, because I talk about it as, you know, the evil that everyone hates to do. But I'm a big believer in there's different ways of selling, but there's definitely, I really always made my people do telemarketing calls. And, you know, I speak about not calling people Monday morning because it's, you know, the day that everyone's getting back to work. And so I encourage them not to reach out on Monday mornings. But there's always, in every aspect that you're going to do, there's always a no that you're going to hear. But how do you bounce back? So a lot of the bouncing back has to do with self-confidence, right?
Mm-hmm.
And learning from the no. So how do you move forward after you hear a no? So what you do is, no's can be very difficult at the beginning when you're first starting at anything, right? But what happens is you really do, I have to be honest, you build a thick skin as you go. So you learn to stop taking the no so personally, because we all, our instinct is, if you say no to me, I feel like you're saying no to me, and that means that you don't agree or approve of me, right? So,
right.
You know, after you go for a while in business, you start saying, and, you know, and my people would come to me, and they say, I'm discouraged. I tried to sell them the promotional items, and they said, no, no, no. I said, so, A, you have to decide where you're going to focus your energy. So are they saying no because you're trying to sell them something that they cannot afford? And if that's the case, then you move forward, and you go to the next person. You have to understand why it's a no. So first you got to understand why it's a no, and you have to learn from it. And then you develop thicker skin. As you start to build confidence in what you're doing, you start to say, hey, okay, if you don't want it, I'm going to find someone who will want what I'm selling because I really believe in what I'm offering. So everyone encounters no's. The key is to as you move, as you're progressing, is the self-belief, the belief in what you're doing and what you're selling, and then to be able to take that no and learn from it and say, hey, what did I do wrong? How come I was told a no? And then to improve yourself, and then as you go along, the no's will hopefully become less and less frequent, and it'll build you up your thick skin so that you'll be more confident in your pitch and in whatever you're doing.
If anybody has ever told Erica Diamond no, I'd like them to call in. No, I'm just kidding. But I would like to break for a minute. And that's really not evident in your bio or anything about you that anybody's really ever said no to. And I want to just take a moment for anybody listening or has just joined us. We're talking with Erica Diamond. She is the unnamed, we won't give her a title, of Women on the Fence. And she's an author of a 99 series book about things you want to know about before you get into business and so forth, an entrepreneurial guide. We've talked a little bit about her book, and we'll get back to that in a minute. But you've won all sorts of awards. You're featured on Blogger, Twitter Moms, Brooke Burke's Modern Mom. Your blog is monetized by Glam Media. I think that's so neat. And you've won just about every award there is. I'd love to know sort of what's Erica got in her mind that's next. What are some of your goals moving forward? Are you a goals type person? Do you have like a 1-year goal, a 5-year goal, a 10-year goal? Can you share with us some of those things that are going on?
Sure. I know they say you're supposed to write your goals down in time limits, right? The one-year goal, the three-month goal, the every-quarter goal. I've never been one to do that. I'm more sort of like a vision board kind of person, more like, I don't know if you ever saw Oprah's episode. It's from The Secret, from the book The Secret and the Laws of Attraction. And, you know, she sort of talks about a vision board. So I'm more like, what's the dream, right? And if the dream takes 3 months or 6 months or 9 months, as long as I'm working towards the goal. For me, personally, at least, that's how I work, right? So for me, it's not about goals in a time limit. For me, it's about what's the goal, what's the end goal, what's the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. So for me, my goal is really just to continue whatever I'm doing now. I'm loving it and I'm enjoying it, and it's my passion. So it is my goal to continue spreading the Women on the Fence brand to as many mediums as possible. So right now, it's in the written word, and I'm often on the radio. So if I can continue to spread the message for, you know, there's two parts of it, of Women on the Fence. There's the Women on the Fence, which is the blog, which is all different inspiration pieces for women to get off the fence in their life, you know, in marriage, in career, in health, with your kids, with your friends. And then there's the whole entrepreneurship part to my brand as well, which is Women in Startup. So my goal is to continue to spread the message of inspiration that we women are worth it. We're you know, that we should continue to, you know, to stop existing and start living, that we're worth it, that we all have greatness in us, and to be able to bring it out to the world. So whether that's just through the written word, which is the blog, my goal is to bring it to more, like I said, to more places. For you can find the brand on radio, hopefully in magazine, on TV. My big, big vision board is to have a Women on the Fence everything, radio show, magazine column, TV show. If you ask me what's the big plan, that's the big plan.
Yeah. Absolutely. So
I want to tell
your website again. Your website is womenonthefence.com, and we've picked apart chapter 5 of your book. I'm sorry. I thought that was just an important chapter.
That's what spoke to you. That's okay.
Well, I think it'll probably speak to, you know, a number of people, because right now, especially in this economy and so forth, selling is just so important. But your book, the actual title is 99 Things Wish They Knew Before Starting Their Own Business, and you can find it on Amazon.com or, you know, any of the other places, or on womenonthefence.com. Katie.
Yeah.
Are you there?
I'm deep in thought. I'm thinking about what, I was thinking very much about what Erica was saying about no, and what you were talking about receiving the word no. What was popping into my head when you were talking is what I learned. Warren Buffett's favorite word is no. And the reason he likes that word, I've been told, is because he learned very early on to say no to others about things that weren't going to work. So I was just sitting here wondering how many times you've been presented with an opportunity, Erica, but you looked at it and you said, you know, that just doesn't fit. I'm going to say no to that. Because what I've learned the older I get, and I'm now 50, is that that is probably one of the most important things I've ever learned in the last 10 years, is to say no. Can
That's
you speak to that
95.
A little bit?
That's number 95 in my book. Learn the art of saying the forbidden word no. It's a taboo word.
Yeah, exactly. Can you speak to that?
Well, of course. We all, I think it goes back to us women in the days of being pleasers, right? We all, I think, have this innate thing where when people come over, we want to be the perfect hostess. We want to please our guests. We want to be a great mom, a great wife. There's this whole notion for us, this whole superwomen complex, right, that we are supposed to be these happy like Mary Poppins robots where everything is just functioning and in play and life is moving and we're happy and we're doing everything and
you should
no
come
one's
over to my
tired.
House for a day.
Right, no one's tired, no one's stressed, we're saying yes to everything, we can handle everything, we can volunteer, we can go to PTA meetings, we can be a career woman, we can be a great mom, a wife, and then what happens is we get burnt out along the way, right? Because we're the yes woman, we're the pleaser, we say yes to everyone. So I always say to the, you know, as far as tips as to learning how to say no, I always say, like, think back to a time where you were actually given the answer no yourself and you were rejected. You know, did you die from it? You know, of course you survived. So I always say don't assume you're going to, you know, inflict serious harm on someone by saying no. Saying no is just a part of everyday life. And so to learn to take it all in stride. you know, the other thing is, you know, we always instinctively say yes, right? You know, someone says, hey, I need a volunteer for so-and-so. Can you help me out? Oh, well, sure, I'll help you out. So I always say, you know, to think about it first. And a great answer would say, I've often started saying, you know, can I think it over and get back to you? Do you mind if I get back to you on that? And this way you sound more professional, more, you know, more mature. And if you come back and say no, it's a much more polite no. It's a much more, it's a no that you gave thought to, right? And so for those people worried about hurting feelings, the great answer to say when you instinctively want to say yes is, you know what, I'm going to think it over. Can I think it over and get back to you? That's a great, become a great answer for me.
Do you know where I've started saying no? This is evil, too. I mean, this is the worst thing to confess ever, but I, with four boys, and they're now 9, 11, 13, and 15, I've been the PTA president, the PTA vice president, the cookie maker. You know, I've done everything for years now since they were itty-bitty. And these past 2 years of my life, this is awful. Nobody rewrite this. But I have not volunteered at all in the kids' schools.
Read a great article about that people
I can't stand it anymore. I'm so tired of that, oh, my God, are we going to sell wrapping paper this year for the $50 and donate that to the PTO? It just drives me nuts.
So you know that you've reached your threshold. Yeah, you've reached your threshold.
My breaking point.
You've reached your breaking point. And that's okay. And that's okay to know that, because when you say no to someone else, you're saying yes to yourself. Right?
Yeah, and you know, the breaking point was I said yes 2 years ago, almost 2 years ago to this day, to volunteering at the craft fair at the elementary school. And they stuck me at this table where I had to cut up T-shirts and glue gun them together to make a tote bag.
Yeah.
And I just,
You said, what did I get myself into here?
What'd you say?
I said, you said, what did I get myself into here?
You know, and it was just one of those moments where, like, I was like, you know, moving forward, I'm going to be spending my time, because it's precious, in a different manner, because this just isn't doing it for me. And, you know, it wasn't, I just am not a big fan of craft fairs, I guess, or something, you know. But, you know, just that kind of thing. And I think you talk about that so much in Chapter 11. That was going to be the other chapter that I talk about, that I was going to ask you to talk about, was balancing it all.
I say that, you know, is there really such thing as having it all? And for me, I don't believe that there is.
Well, yeah, because we're not Mary Poppins, you know, cookie cutter robots at all. We're, you know, you do. If you act like that, you get to a point where you're just absolutely nuts. And I've been that person before, too, where, you know, my house is perfect, everything's dusted, my kids are all in ties, and my hair is done, and I'm in heels, and I'm going to go on the radio and TV now. And by the end of the day, you're about to fall over, and, oh, and then there's your husband. You know, it's just like, ugh. You know,
and you go forget about him. Go forget about your husband, and then see what happens to your whole Mary Poppins world.
I've already had one of those divorces before, so I'm good. But you know that there's this gal out there who you should maybe meet sometime. She writes an entire book. You know, I think there are a number of women out there who write entire books on just that chapter. But it's Marcia Reynolds, and she's an expert on Best Ever You. She's one of our writers, and she's written a book called Wonder Woman. And it is exactly that. Yeah, it's a very, very good book. But what do you think about, I didn't know what you meant, and I love this, but what does you gotta move mean?
You gotta move.
In that step,
You gotta move. You better work. number 97 is you gotta move. So and for me, and in my opinion and in my life, when we practice good nutrition and good exercise and self-care, then we are on our way to clear thinking and a successful life. So what that means is whatever self-care means for you and whatever movement means for you, you got to move, be it yoga, Zumba, a walk outside, a run outside, a bike ride, something. Because when our endorphins are moving, then we are decreasing serotonin levels in our body, which is the number one depression hormone. So when you're keeping these hormones at bay because you're moving, then your head is a lot clearer and you're able to think clear and you're able to say no when you need to say no and take rejection all in stride, and your life will become lighter and clearer if you are exercising. Really, I know that sounds quite simplistic, but just go, if you're not, go ahead and try it 3 to 4 days a week and you'll see a difference. So
yeah,
when I talk about moving, I talk about whatever. I mean, now if you're not, if you're not, some people love to run. If the thought of running makes you completely, if you hate that, then do something else that you like. And it doesn't really matter what it is. It could be, there's all different ways to move your body, but you have to move your body to keep your brain thinking clearly.
Yeah, I completely agree, which is, I love that point because I think one of the things that women are very, very guilty of, and you'll see it in people who gain weight or people, who have bad eating habits and things like that, is that they don't take care of themselves first and don't – women are very, very guilty, I think, of not taking care of themselves first. We take care and worry about everything else.
Yeah.
We wake up in the morning and we have 5,000 things we think about that day, from, are the kids out of bed, to dinner time, to snack time, to homework time, to there's a million things going on. But have we actually thought about taking 1 hour out of the day to exercise?
Oh, my goodness, we'd be horrible if we actually did something for ourselves, right?
Yeah, it did. Oh, my heavens, words, And I have a thing, I have a system in place now. I discovered this 2 years ago very thoroughly about myself. It was at that moment where I said, I'm not doing this craft fair stuff anymore. I'm not doing this. Instead, I'm going to take these hours that I'm donating, doing nothing, and carve them out to myself because I'm spending so much time doing everything for everybody else but me. And I have, I take 1 hour, and it's either in the morning or night, out for myself every day, and I either exercise, read, I do something very clearly where no one touches
me. It's your me time.
Yep.
It's your me time.
Yeah,
and
usually
it's crucial.
I walk. Yeah, I usually walk about 4 miles every day with my friend Lori, and that's the usual thing we do. But, sometimes it's broken up with ballet or tap dancing or, like really bad ballet last night, and that was funny. But in the summertime it can be as simple as, going to the garden store, walking around there, picking out a plant and coming home and planting it or something. But I always
I call that all self-care, and that's like I said, for me, self-care, and I'm not talking about you've got to move. I'm talking about there's sort of the movement, which is crucial to your A, your health, and B, your mental state. And then there's the me time. So for me, self-care, if you ask me, Erica, what would you love to do for your me time? For me, my thing is going to the bookstore, grabbing a coffee at Starbucks, and perusing through a bookstore. I could get lost in a bookstore, and for me, that's just,
I
love that time. Walking through the park, with my iPod, for me is more me time. Being outside in the fresh air with my music is another thing that I love to do. So it's a matter of figuring out what you like to do. Going back to movement, I literally encourage my women to literally pencil it in your agenda or your BlackBerry. And that means that it should literally be on a recurring task. I know that sounds strange, but it's the night before and you're organizing your day tomorrow, it's just part of your day. It has to become part of your day. So when you look at your agenda the next day, from 12 to 12:45 or from 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. or from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., that is the time where you are doing nothing other than exercising your body in whatever way that you so choose.
Yep.
So put it in.
Yeah, it's a must, because without that self-care, the stress levels go up, everything, the cortisol, the serotonin, everything, all the hormones go completely out of whack, especially women and so forth. And I just think you become unable to balance. There's no way without taking care of yourself that you can possibly take care of anybody else.
Yeah. And you can do it for so long. You can, there are times where I'm very busy and I can't get to the gym, but I know
I'm gonna
things start
somewhere
to suffer.
Yeah, exactly. You know that there's going to be makeup time.
Sure.
Somewhere. Yeah, absolutely. All right. So we have 6 minutes left to speak with you. And
I have a question. Can I pop in, Elizabeth? Your 98th section, your 98th tip is, I think, the most difficult of anything you said in all of your 99 things to do, and that's surrender. And that is my greatest challenge, because I'm also a type AAA, always wanting to, I mean, I've had so many vision boards, I can't even count them all. I do goals every day. I'm so driven. And
you fill entire hotel rooms with papers.
I mean, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, I'm a strategic planner all the time. And so I would love for you to speak to surrender, because if you do all the other things and you don't surrender, bam. So can you speak to that?
Well, you know, I credit my mom for really helping me with this whole concept and the art of surrendering, because I was like you were. I pushed, I planned, I went, I drove, and then I started to burn out. So that I knew that wasn't serving me well. So the whole concept of, you know, I speak about surrendering is that, okay, you know what? The dishes are going to stay in the sink today and no one's going to die because of it. You know, I'm going to get the B instead of the A, and that's going to suck and it's going to feel bad. But again, it's not a life-threatening thing, and I will be able to get through it, and I'll move forward. So I always look at things like, is anyone going to die or is anybody sick? So if A and B are answered that everything's in check, then I've done my best. So it's about doing your best, and it's about learning to surrender to the illusion of perfection and accepting that you're not going to be at your best every single day. And so that's why really I encourage women to rest and have, you know, good sleep and good nutrition, because if there's the big presentation or the big, you want to be your best for that particular event or that, you know, or that presentation. So I talk about self-care and rest, but to just surrender that, to surrender to the whole superwoman and the whole perfection, the whole illusion of perfection. And then once you do surrender, you're going to see it's going to feel really great that, oh my goodness, that email, it's 9 o'clock at night. Do I really have to make myself crazy to reply to that email at 9 o'clock tonight because it came in at 9 o'clock? Can it wait till the next morning where I'm thinking clearer and I won't be so frustrated or annoyed, you know, after I reply to it? I may get it done and I'll feel great that I got it done, right? But I didn't do it right, because do you sort of get where I'm going with that? It's that
mm-hmm.
not
yeah.
having that
yeah.
feeling that you don't have to stay on top of every single thing.
Well, I think also that's this is a trick, because I think women spend a lot, and in fact far, some people spend way too much time comparing themselves to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you stop comparing yourself to other people, what they have, what they look like, what they do, what they wear, what
yeah.
they've done and everything, and just really focus in on you and
yeah.
what your goals are and what your achievements
yeah.
are and what makes you happy and what makes you feel good and what makes you exercise
yeah.
you
yeah.
as a
yeah.
whole person,
yeah.
that's when you can really truly start to shine, I think.
Yeah, and develop
really
a
learn.
True feeling and a feeling of inner contentment and peace, really.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I preach a lot, is just that, you know, best ever you is all about you, not anybody else. It's about you. What makes what
it's about
helps
your best.
You. Yeah, exactly. And it's about throwing down all the art of jealousy and the art of compare right and just getting rid of it and being
great.
Who
I left
you
that
really
point
are.
Out in my book. I left
yeah.
that point out in my book. That's a great point. Never compare. Never compare. And
no,
I speak
no,
about
never,
that in my
ever,
blog.
Ever.
And
no, because if you spend your life, and
right.
I don't know how much time we have right now, but if you spend your life comparing yourself to everybody else, you've missed out completely on yourself. And
exactly.
You know, and no one can be Erica Diamond, Elizabeth Hamilton, or Dr. Katie Eastman. That's
yeah.
who
yeah,
we
exactly.
are. And nobody
and,
exists
and
like us. Unless you
and that's
twin.
What the authenticity is all about
yeah.
when you spoke
yeah.
to that, Erica, is
yeah.
if you're true to yourself and you understand who that self is and what's important and what you value,
right.
then you'll surround yourself with people that fit with that. But
right.
that's,
and that share
I
your
think
same,
most,
and that share your visions and goals.
Exactly.
In the same way.
I think
like,
the self-work is really the most important work to do first.
Yeah, and
absolutely.
Then finding people, and then I think that's a trick, real fast because we're almost out of time, but another trick is aligning yourself with women who are also not jealous and comparing, and also because you know that you could visit Erica and she wouldn't sit there and be mad
and
the
be
whole
judgmental.
Time that you had those
yeah,
shoes on and your hair was done.
That's
Erica
about
would be
getting
like,
a buddy.
Cool. Yeah.
I call that a buddy,
yeah.
and I write about it in
yeah.
my book about getting, there's a mentor and then there's a buddy and our girlfriends and our sounding board who keep us grounded
cool.
and who keep things real.
And you have to be careful
yeah.
who those are, because there's some people, there's you know, it's a whole, that's a whole other call. But anyway, we have so enjoyed having you on our show today, Erica. So we've talked for an hour now with Erica Diamond,
the
unnamed chief executive officer, founder of Women on the Fence, and the author of 99 Things, Women. I'm going to get the I want to get the title of this right, but I've got to scroll all the way back up to the top of the book, because you can go ahead and tell me the title one more time. It's the 99 series.
It's the 99 Things Women Wish They Knew Before Starting Their Own
there
Business.
There you go.
And
yeah,
thank you as well for having me.
Entrepreneur
there
for some reason. Yeah, no, thank you so much for being on our show. And you can get her book, 99 Things Women Wish They Knew Before Starting Their Own Business, on Amazon. And please visit Erica on Twitter at Women on the Fence, or visit her website at womenonthefence.com. Thank you, Erica Diamond. It has been lovely having you on our show today.
Thank you.
Thank you. We hope you come back again. Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you. Have a best ever day. Bye.
Bye-bye.